welcome back to Why Are People Listening to This, a podcast about why people are listening to stuff. My name's Jake Hanlon. I'm here with the yin to my yang, Justin Gregg.
Hello.
And we're going to be back to the number one song on Billboard's this week. It's finally changed.
Yeah.
If you ever listen to this stuff in order, but Adele is no longer number one. Poor, you know, she had a good run.
She had a long run.
Now her career is over. No.
No.
until the next single from the album comes out. But it's Taylor Swift's All Too Well from Taylor's version.
Taylor's version.
Which is, you know, I'm excited about the concept behind this.
Okay.
Not so excited about the song, but I don't have a problem with the song.
Okay.
Like, there's stuff to talk about there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you know anything about the history of this song or that before going into this today?
Yes.
You did?
I did.
So you, okay. So you, because I knew literally nothing.
Oh,
I'd
no,
never heard this.
Yeah.
Never heard it in my life. And so all of the stuff that I'm going to talk about today is stuff that I researched this morning.
Oh, well, good. Because your facts are probably better than mine. Because I'm going based off of memory.
Okay.
So you can fact check me.
Well, just let's see how tight that memory is, Hanlon.
So, I remember, I remember when Taylor Swift came out, with the hits, like the Max Martin tunes and stuff that she was doing, like when she was 16 and 17 years old, because I just remember those things. And I actually have a friend that did a cover of Taylor Swift's cover of Shake It Off, which was like, and he went viral with that.
Okay.
And like, had like a million views. Like, this was at the beginning of viral videos and was on Ellen because of it and got like TV commercials and kind of stuff. It really made his career jump forward. His name is Joel Cross. He's a songwriter and a guitarist and a singer. He's a great guy. And that was my introduction to anything Taylor Swift, because let's face it, Taylor Swift, we are not in her demographic of listeners.
Middle-aged dudes?
Yeah, middle-aged white dudes. We're not listening to Taylor Swift.
No.
So, but I remember, I never had a problem, like, you know, like I'm not going to listen to her music because it's not geared towards me, but I'm also not going to hate on her music because she's trying to be an artist, a singer, songwriter, country music artist at the beginning and a pop artist later. And I remember her being blacklisting or like having some sort of conflict with streaming services where she refusing to like allow her music to be streamed because of the royalties issues, like, which is a real issue.
Sure, you get paid nonsense
nothing per stream. And I mean, she was selling like multi-million copies of these albums and stuff like that. So like, she had made her money, but like, she was holding fast to her like intellectual property. And I thought, good for her.
Yeah.
Like, especially in such a patriarchal dominated industry like the music industry is, and women now are having a lot more say in their art. And, you know, like, the biggest selling artists in the world are women right now, like Beyonce, Rihanna, Adele, you know, etc. Taylor Swift, Billie Eilish. Well, we can go on and on. But when I heard that she like wanted to buy back her masters, and they wouldn't let her have them. Is that right? Something along those lines?
I don't know.
So that she decided to just re-record everything an independent label.
And that's what all these
Taylor's versions are, right? And this is the second or third one of these that she's done? I'm not sure.
Isn't it a whole album of them?
Yeah, like she's re-recording entire albums.
Oh, got it. Again. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but like just doing her whole album again the way that, without having a music producer that was telling her what to do with her songs and rewriting the songs as needed the way that she wants them. And like, I think maybe in the case of this song, like finishing the song in a way that she wanted it, like to finish the story that is of the song.
My understanding is that originally it was 10 minutes long and then they whittled it down
to
take things out to make it more palatable to
so
a regular
it could be
album.
Played on a stream or on a radio.
And now
radio
a big
or
middle finger, because this song is a 10 minute long.
It's 10 minutes
number
long.
One. I wrote it down. It's a, this is the first time that this has happened. It broke the Guinness World Record for the longest song ever to reach number one.
I'm super excited about that.
Yeah.
So I think that's
just her giving a big middle finger to all those producers who are like, no, this is what you have to do with your music. She's like, oh, yeah?
She's like, oh, yeah.
Check this out. So that's cool.
This has happened several times over the course of popular music. And like the first time that it really happened was with the Righteous Brothers and their song Oh my God, I can't believe I can't remember the name of the song. It's not off my head. It's the most played song in the history of music of the 20th century.
That I'll
come back to it later.
Darn it!
Because it's like right on the tip of my brain. Anyways, that song, when they recorded that song, was easily over 5 minutes long.
Mm.
And the rumors, and the anecdotes from that time is that they lied on the back of the disc of the record and said that the song was under 4 minutes.
Oh.
So that record DJs, because that's how music in the 60s was communicated through DJs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They would play it.
Not knowing
that it was actually 4.5, 5 minutes long, which is way too long back then. It would be considered way too long today still.
Sure, right? Yeah.
And they would play it, and people loved the song. And it's still right on the very
tip of my brain. It's not Unchained Melodies.
No,
and that's what I was saying.
Driving me crazy.
Well, should I look it up? You keep going.
I will, Google it.
Before you lose your mind. I understand this.
This is why we just press record and podcast. Anyways, the Righteous Brothers.
Hmm. You're asking me to spell righteous correctly.
Yes, I am.
Good luck with that.
Right, E-us.
You lost that love and feeling?
That's it. Yeah. Shit. I knew it was going to be the first time. But that was like, that was the most played song of the 20th century. Like, during that period of time in the 60s, like when like the Beatles hadn't come out yet, but like those first rock and roll stars' careers had sort of been cut short.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, like dying in plane crashes or being recruited by the army
or whatever,
or whatnot, right? And for this to come around here again, like there's been other number one hit songs or big huge hit songs like Stairway to Heaven, like,
well, like
is
Meat
over
Loafs.
8 minutes long.
Everything Meatloaf does is 20 minutes.
These long epic log things, but are they number one? Like certified number one hit?
Like, yeah. So like, this is a hit.
So this is like. This is like certified, like rubber stamped, like a 10-minute long song that people are listening to in its entirety, perhaps. But like, it's an interesting thing because this shows the strength of Taylor Swift's fan base. They've got to be fueling this, right?
Well, that's what's interesting about this song, because like you were saying before, like the song is it's okay. Like, in terms of just, like, the melody and the structure of all that, it's just repeating those same chords over and over again. It's
incredibly repetitious.
It's, yeah, but not unpleasant to listen to. But not like you listen to it like, Unrighteous Brothers song and be like, oh my God, this is... It's dramatic. It's got me. And so there's something else fueling it, and that something else is all the backstory that you're talking about. Plus the phenomenon of the original version of this song coming out from what I read about it.
Okay.
Where there was reference to this scarf. Does this sound familiar?
No.
Because this apparently is an enormous deal for people who are not middle-aged dudes.
Okay.
There was a scarf referenced in the beginning and the end of the song, because it's about a breakup that she had in real life with Jake Gyllenhaal. It was a real thing that happened. And he supposedly gave her a scarf, and you can see the pictures of them walking.
Which he's wearing the scarf.
Yeah, she's got the scarf that she gave her or whatever. And so this song is about that moment in time. They were only together for a few months. And so you can directly link those two things. And for some reason, this idea of like he put the scarf away in a drawer, which is referenced in her lyrics. Mm-hmm. They're good lyrics in that sense. Evocative. People fixated on this scarf thing, and so they fixated on wanting to know if he still had the scarf, and they would ask Maggie Gyllenhaal if he had it. It became a whole thing. I don't understand it. I just read about it this morning.
Yeah,
but it was huge, and so this song, it was already like hard Taylor Swift lore, and it was like the number one thing people were fixated on. So now it's back in the full 10-minute version, and people are just who are already into this song, for that reason, love it, and then. The people who look at her songwriting, I guess, and her lyricism are like, well, these are good lyrics. And this is one of her best songs in that sense. And so that is suddenly brought it to number one.
I'm imagining this is probably one of her best songs. Again, like, I don't listen to Taylor Swift. But we talked about in a previous podcast how neither one of us listened to lyrics right away. Like, we kind of like are listening to other things.
Yes.
Like, and so I gave it a hard listen for lyrics, like and like her use of metaphor and like and how she's like stringing together the story that is the song.
Yeah,
and it's good.
Well, that's
like I'm not like this is not like I'm not saying that this is like like world-breakingly like poetic like you're listening to like the Beatles or if you're listening to like James Taylor or you know, even like those guys are even like pretty easy to kind of copy, but
yeah,
you know, it's not like I'm not listening to this like curled up in the fetal position holding a pillow crying about
but it is,
past relationships, but I could good. See how yeah. people would. And definitely like the thing about Taylor Swift, like, is that a lot of the her demographic, young women, you know, and people who identify as women, like, are like watched her grow up and go through all these failed relationships
yeah,
and
yeah.
watch her become a woman and be successful and fight against and fight for her right to like have her music the way that she wanted to. And this is a big win.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like a humongous win for them. And I'm kind of glad that it's number one, because number one, it's a 10-minute long song.
Yep.
I'm into anything that increases the flat rate attention span of anybody.
Sure, but let alone youth. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Like, for me, like, listening to 10-minute long songs is not a challenge. Like, I do it
daily. It is daily. Your job. Yeah. yeah.
like, I listen to a lot of classical music that's, like, long pieces of music that are an hour long for like a sonata or a symphony. Maybe I'm listening to classical music. I've listened to a lot of jazz music as a jazz musician, and so like those routinely are 8 to 15 minutes long.
Yeah,
like in like more contemporary forms of the music, but like the music changes so much that and moves through all of these different types of technical things to keep the interest of the listener. But a 10-minute long pop song that has 5 chords in it total,
yeah,
it's
a different ball game.
And that yeah. fifth chord is just another version of one of the other fourth chords that doesn't happen until the last 2 minutes of the song. Like, anybody who listens to this like really has to like her lyrics, or I do feel like she sings it very, very well, and she has a very distinctive voice that's obviously been incredibly influential on female
vocalists,
you know, vocalists yeah. since, in like that sort of vein, and the harmonies that are done with the backup singer, I don't know who the name of it, but I do remember seeing an interview on, I don't know if it was like Seth Meyers' late night show or if it was Colbert or somebody like that, where she intentionally wanted this one person to sing the harmony parts for her on this song, and like it was like a dream come true sort of scenario.
Oh, cool.
And like it definitely sounds fantastic. Like,
yeah,
their voices really do match well.
Yeah. So the question of why are people listening to this, which is what we're here to discuss, is like, there's that backstory that I mentioned.
Yeah.
But then the other one is like, musically, is this a great song? Like what you're talking about. Like, it doesn't do very much compared to what a 10-minute jazz song will be doing in terms of changes.
No, it does nothing.
So it really is. And like we'd said before, like, I don't listen to lyrics. I don't care about lyrics for some reason.
Yeah.
When I'm listening to music. But this song is all about the lyrics, because it's just cycling through the same thing. Because
there's nothing else really.
And so I'm like,
there's like a really muted sounded piano, like,
yeah,
like a piano that would be like in an old house. And I think that that's very intentional. The piano sounds that way. Yeah. But it's like when I texted Justin and said, it's this week it's all too soon, you know, and he said, okay, let's do it. And then I got a text back from you like 20 minutes later. It was like, this is the same chord progression as With or Without You by U2.
Yeah, because especially in the beginning, there's that bass going there, dum 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 dum, and I just immediately like, with or without.
Yeah, no, and I burst out laughing when I saw the text, because it, like, I hadn't listened to it yet.
Yeah,
right. So then I had to listen to it. Right, I was just like, oh shoot, I gotta like bring this up, and I, you know, pull out my Apple Music app, and I'm like, yeah. Totally,
yeah.
It's the same chord.
So yeah, so it's not revolutionizing music writing in that sense, which is why I was like, okay, I have to like look at it through the lyrics, because I never do that. And so I printed them all out and I read them.
Oh gosh, how much paper did that
take? This is like 6 pages. It was nuts.
Oh my goodness.
But so I have it here now. And I was like, okay, I have to appreciate this the way it was meant to be appreciated, which is the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I read it and I'm like, oh yeah, no, okay. There's a bunch of good writing in there.
Yeah.
And that's why people are responding to it as much as the backstory. Like, it is, she does sort of invoke this idea, like she's talking about being upstate, walking around in the fall, drinking coffee with her ex-lover, and then the scarf. Like, it's all very evocative and pretty good.
Lots of great imagery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I understand why people enjoy it.
Yeah.
I totally understand that. And for all the things you're talking about, like women who grow up listening to her and watching her battle the world, and mm-hmm. now she's got this huge win. So
yeah.
there's a lot of reasons why I think this is number one.
Yeah. She's a major artist.
Yeah,
I would have like the first couple times I listened to it, like I will definitely admit that I did not get through the entire thing with all my attention focused on it.
Sure.
Because I personally needed something more to happen than just reverbed piano and some like yeah. bass and two voices. No matter how nicely done they were, no matter how many ways she tried to like change up the melody and do a few little vocal ad libby sort of things, I just needed a little bit more. Like, I'm not saying that they needed to come in with a drum set or anything like that. There's tons of things that they could have added, like every second verse, maybe that like a slide guitar, like a little like dobro-ish sort of thing, or maybe like some strings as it builds, you know.
But at 10 minutes, right? Like, if you're repeating those chords for 10 minutes, like, you can only add and subtract so many things before it just that two sound. Like, it really is trafficking on you listening to the lyrics and not noticing not the monotony of it, because there's a build. Like, there is a build, and she starts singing bigger.
Absolutely.
Yep. But like you're saying,
yeah,
there's not much happening.
But you just keep turning around the same four chords. Like, you know, I taught a music theory class this morning, and it was like, this is why we learn these things, so that like when you hear a song on the radio, like you just immediately know that like the chords that make this song are C, you know.
Yeah.
It's in the key of C, and it's C, G, A minor, and F. And that's 8 minutes of the song.
Yeah.
and then it's, then there's like a break, and then it goes to C, A minor, F, and G. Like, these are the chords that make those keys happen. Like, we call them cadences or turnarounds. Like,
oh, right.
And if we take the notes that make those chords in the way that the roots of those chords move, it creates a very pleasing cycling sort of thing, and then it also creates an ending. Like, every time that she plays that G chord, or, you know, that goes to C, that could be it.
Sure.
Like, it just sounds like
resolves, bom, bom, or
then there we go, you know. And if you go from F to C, it's the same thing. It's, they call that a different type of cadence. That's called a plagal cadence. Plagal cadence?
Okay.
Which is the amen chord, like if you ever go to like Catholic Mass.
Okay.
Like, that's the amen chord, 4-1. And the other one is called an authentic cadence, which is 5-1, which is the one that everybody, we all know these sounds. Like, they've been ingrained. If you listen to Western music, you've heard them 100,000 million times.
Well, this is the cut for people like me who don't know anything about this, but who still write songs. I probably do this all the time, but don't know what I'm doing.
Well, like, it sounds like With or Without You because of kind of the pulsating sort of element to it.
Yeah.
And like, the tempo is very similar, and it could be in the same key. Like, I don't have
a pitch
or anything like that, but it's like a million other songs.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch that use that.
You could take those four chords, like in the key of C, like C, F, A minor, and G, and mix them up in almost any combination of those four chords, and you're going to find something that sounds fine.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all you really need. And you don't need to understand why that is. Like, you don't need somebody to walk in with manuscript paper and show you the music theory behind it. But, you know, when I used to teach, like, beginners how to play the guitar, like, I would teach them chords like that. I wouldn't just give them a random sheet of chords and say, go learn these chord shapes. I would say, you need to learn how to switch between C, G, A minor, and F, and any combination of those four, so that you can play any song that you hear on the radio within reason. Like, but, like, you know, if you want to learn how to play an Eagles song, that's how you do it. You want to learn how to play an early Beatles song? That's how you do it. You want to learn how to play
Taylor Swift?
That's how you do it, you know? And even like when we did Adele, same thing. That was the same formula, just done in a different way and orchestrated in a different way.
Sure.
And then like the way that Adele sings is how Adele sings, and the way that Taylor Swift sings, how Taylor Swift sings.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's the flavor. Like, it's the same roadmap, you know, like, We have the same 12 notes that we've had for 1,200 years,
uh-huh.
you know, in Western music, right?
Yeah.
So how many ways can you possibly mix those up that still sound good?
Mm-hmm.
It's finite. It's incredibly finite.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes it's difficult to break away from using very simple chord progressions. So you have to be clever with your lyricism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one good way to do it. Like, and she executes that very well with like you have virtuosity of your voice,
mm-hmm.
like a Stevie Adele Wonder or Adele, or you know, or your rhythm like Michael Jackson, or you know, or Silk Sonic, you know, Silk which Sonic. We did the other week, you know, and you know, you have to find ways to be creative within a framework. Unless then like when you start doing weird things with harmony, like that's when you step on people's toes and they're like, I don't know why I like that. I don't like it.
You break out of Western tradition.
Yeah, or like you're reaching into Western parts of tradition that are not popular music.
Oh, I see.
Like you're stretching into like progressive rock or jazz or something where it's like, why is that chord sound so weird? Like, I'm, you know, like, and meanwhile, like people who actually like those kinds of sounds, like that's my shit right there.
Is that just a matter of exposure? Like the more you listen to stuff, the more you understand why it's good and then you actually like it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would imagine that if you played John Coltrane for somebody the first time, like they'd be like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And then like, what is this? And it's like, this is one of the greatest musicians that ever walked the face of earth. You know, and at the same time, you could be like, listen to this, and you'd listen to like, you know, Beethoven's Third Symphony, and they'd be like, I don't like this, but this is clearly like historically like a landmark accomplishment.
Yeah.
But then you put Baby Shark on, and everybody gets it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's all about exposure.
Yeah.
You know, the same 12 notes that you know. That Huey Lewis in the News uses are the same 12 notes that Kendrick Lamar uses.
Sure.
Right? So it's the delivery, it's the context, and all those things are super important.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason why this song is number one right now is because of that context.
Context,
like
yeah.
You had said.
Yeah.
And because of like the skill of her songwriting, obviously she really has like, you know, I'm quite amazed that she wrote such a... I don't know how old the original version was.
I think she was 20 or 21 years old. And
that's really young to write at such a high level.
Like, and she... My understanding from what her... I read this on Wikipedia, so it has to be true. But yeah, she said she was just on stage with her band at a sound check and started playing these chords, which are the obvious chords to play, and like monologue, random making up shit, singing over them.
Right.
And some of the lyrics sounded good and some of the melodies. So she just was like, ah.
She kept going
and
with
she,
that.
Yeah, she kept it and then turned it into a thing. So like she just pulled it out of nowhere at a very young age, talking about a legitimate recent breakup in her life that became a what it is now. Like a huge deal.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I think that's impressive. To be 20, I mean, like, I remember being 21 and I didn't know shit.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly didn't. I
couldn't
certainly
do this.
Didn't have
yeah.
any. I couldn't do, could never. I can't do that now. I'm not a songwriter at that part. Like, I'm not trying to. When I write songs, it's with you and we're writing kids' songs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to write anything like about like serious, like emotional despair or like. Trying to come up with all sorts of metaphor and allegory about
scarves.
You're
not doing fetal possession
and,
stuff.
No, yeah. I'm not trying to make anybody cry or feel feelings. Like
yeah.
I'm, you know, but like, it's like, you know, I have a lot of respect for what she's doing, like, because she's in a battle with the music industry, and like the music industry doesn't know what it is anymore anyway. Like,
yeah. Good point. Like,
you know, the irony about like streaming, you know what the number one, the best royalty paying service for streaming is?
YouTube?
No.
I don't know.
Napster.
Napster? Still a thing?
Napster is still a thing and they pay the artists the best.
That's crazy. Because
they started
out screwing over artists and now they pay. Yeah, because Spotify is just, it's a hilarious joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could say things about Spotify, but I'm not going to because I probably get on some watch lists.
Well, I think, I mean, Spotify is great. For discovering music. It doesn't seem to be as good for paying artists to make music.
They're atrociously bad.
Yeah, but there are other ways that artists can make music after they've gotten the exposure. That's kind of the...
Yeah, the but you know what idea. They say about exposure.
Too much exposure can kill you.
Yeah, you can die from exposure.
You can die from exposure. Yeah. I know. This is the artist's thing. But I mean, at least, like you're saying, at least there's other ways to distribute it.
But artists are still making money. Like, I mean...
Yeah.
You know, it's just not the way that the model has changed. And I think that a lot of people are trying to figure that all out. And we talk about streaming and like the number of streams that somebody gets is now equivalent to the number of album sales they got. But people still do buy albums.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I remember like maybe like it was like, geez, it's probably 10 years ago, but I'm gonna say 5 years ago, like it took until like November for somebody to sell a million copies of an album.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was like Beyonce or Taylor Swift. I can't remember which one it was, but like it took the whole year for somebody to sell a million copies. Like in the 90s, like in the late 90s particularly,
yeah,
like Justin Timberlake or Jay-Z would like drop an album and they'd sell 700,000 copies on the first day.
Yeah.
Like,
because people were buying physical albums.
Because that's what people were spending their money on in the 90s. Like music had like reached like this sort of like zenith, like between like the closing out of the grunge era with like those bands still, and like rock music was still like people were doing mega tours and like people were still, rock and roll was still really super strong and selling. And then you had like the rebirth of the boy bands and the girl bands, like the Spice Girls and 98 Degrees and like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. And then you still had Whitney Houston. Maybe she had passed by then, but like Mariah Carey was still selling huge amounts of albums. Hip hop was like, Jay-Z was selling huge amounts of albums. Like, and everybody was just like in a competition to see how many millions of albums you could sell. Like it became like a normal thing to say, I sold platinum. And you'd be like, yeah, but I sold 8 times platinum. Like when Kid Rock can sell 10 times platinum, like, you know that like everybody's just buying music.
Oh, Kid Rock.
As opposed to like now nobody wants to touch that guy with a 10-foot pole.
No, but we shouldn't talk about it now, but there's that music video that came out that he just did.
I thought he was dead, to be honest.
Well, I think the joke being that Weird Al went on Twitter and was like, I swear to God, this is not me. So that's good trolling. I managed to get Weird Al back in this podcast. Good.
Yeah, he'll keep coming up.
Yeah, he will.
Like Eurovision.
Yeah, it's always there in the background. This
song will not be on Eurovision. It's way too long.
It's correct. It won't be.
It still baffles me that it's 10 minutes long. Like, and I totally understand why her producers on the original version of it would be like, Taylor...
Oh, yeah.
Like, we need to, like, cut out the middle 2/3 of this.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
Can you rewrite this in a way so that it's still a succinct story?
Yep.
You know? And I could imagine, from her perspective, how furious I would be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't tell me how to art.
Yeah. It's true. But at that age, when she was younger, they could. I mean, she was in their hands, you know?
Especially, like, where you're, like, just starting to really kind of, like, make real money and like you have a real strong fan base and you don't want to like go against the industry because they'll sink you. Like,
that's true.
Until you have a power, like she has power.
But now. She did. She went against them. She took her power.
She took back her power. Yeah. She's 31 years old and
Man.
Yeah, it's great. Okay. I think that she's a great story.
Great.
For pop music.
Well, we're pretty lyrical about this story for this song, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people are just mean about stuff, but wouldn't...
Why be mean?
No.
She did a great job.
There's so much interesting context here if you look past, just the fact that it's a 10-minute pop song and dig into what's going on.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I think we should play the damn thing.
Yeah.
It's 10 minutes, guys. So settle in.
Get a cup of tea or something.
Get a cup of tea. Go to the bathroom real quick
Get your favorite blanket and
curl up on the ground.
And pillow. And curl up in the fetal position. And
cry about the scarf. And
have a good cry.
Yeah. The scarf
thing. What's wrong with about a good cry?
Yeah.
I feel like going home and having a good cry.
Well, listen to this thing. Get your favorite scarf. Cuddle your scarf and cry.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
Okay, have a good week.
Good luck out there.
Get some tissues.
I walked to the door with you. The air was cold, but something about it felt like home somehow. And I left my scarf there at your sister's house. And you've still got it in your drawer even now. Disposition and my wide-eyed gaze. We're singing in the car, getting lost upstate. Autumn leaves falling down like pieces into place, and I can picture it after all these days. telling stories about you on the T-ball team. You taught me about your past, thinking if you choose me. And you were tossing me the car keys, but the patriarchy keychain on the ground. We were always skipping town, and I was thinking on the drive down.
Thing you've ever known, it was
but your lovers stay my age. From when your Brooklyn broke my skin and bones, I'm a soldier who's returning half her weight. And did the twin flame bruise paint you blue? Just between us, did the love affair maim you too? 'Cause in this city's barren cold, I still remember the first fall of snow and how it glistened as it fell. I remember it all too well. Just between us, did the love affair maim you all too well? Just between us, do you remember it all too well? Just between us, I remember it all too well. Down the stairs, I was there.
Why Are People Listening to This is brought to you by the Black Box Collective and Outside the Lines Press, and it's produced by me, Jake Hanlon, and my friend Justin Gregg.
If you enjoyed the show, please give us a rating and maybe a review on the Apple Podcast Store. This is the number one thing you can do to help out the show, strangely enough, and it's simple and it's easy, and you can do it right now.